Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from IssuesProgram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out IssuesProgram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out IssuesProgram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
What is up, bastards and wenches, and welcome to a special edition of One on One, PAX East 2017 edition. I am your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo. Thanks again for tuning in. Right now, it's about 9:15. Doors are about to open for media in about 15 minutes, and I am stoked. I am very excited to see what we're going to be witnessing on the floor. We've got a bunch of great indie games, a couple AAA titles, and of course, for your listening pleasure right here and now, some kick-ass interviews with developers of the finest and coolest games that are being showcased at the Penny Arcade Expo this year. I hope you're stoked. Let's kick things off right now. This is the PAX East 2017 One-on-One Special. Game on, motherfuckers! Folks, there's a ton of party games out there, but there is only one party game out there where you have to save bratty children from the brink of death. That is Think of the Children, and I'm with Adric from, what is your company's name? I don't think I even asked that.
Yeah, no, so we're from Jammed Up Studios, based out of Brisbane, Australia.
That is super cool. So how was the flight here, by the way? Because I know that's about, 20 hours.
Yeah, long and, about 24 total traveling time for me.
Wow. So first off, tell us a little bit about your company.
Yeah, so we do game jams, and this came out of a game jam itself. So we made it in a 48-hour jam and then polished it up and brought it over here.
That is really cool. So, Think of the Children, the object of the game, of course, is not just to save the children, but you also have to make sure you do all the other tasks within there. But the most important aspect is to make sure they don't die. And they die fucking brutally.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like real parenting. You gotta keep them safe, but you've got stuff to do. Like, you're a person yourself, you have things you need to get done. And so it's all about balancing both.
Right. So, some of the aspects that we have to do is we got to keep them from being in the street, we got to keep them from drowning, keeping from eating poisonous berries, setting themselves on fire, being eaten by dingoes because it's Australia.
Yeah. we got loads in there. We got sharks coming and getting them, and we've got a lot more planned of wolves and going camping and all the dangers around that. And then, it should be a pretty hazardous adventure.
Right. So I know that this game did come out of a game jam, but where did, the first idea for this spark from?
So we started in this game jam itself, and we were making this game around love and power was our keywords. And we were thinking about, ghosts trying to kill your children, you have to keep them safe. But then it kind of dawned on us that you don't need an antagonist to kill children, they will do it themselves. And so it just went from there, that we just got to keep the kids safe from their own worst enemy, themselves.
Right, kind of like the movie Final Destination.
Yeah.
You got to keep them from the natural causes of death.
Exactly.
So, what are some of your favorite little aspects that you yourself put into Think of the Children?
I'd have to say the sound of a kid getting hit by a car is just beautiful. We spent a lot of time on that, getting the scream and the crunch just right, and it really, you feel it when you see it happen.
And now to our listeners, that does sound horrifying, but trust me, it is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we have this bright aesthetic, we're trying to keep it happy, all the music's happy. We really want to juxtapose the morbidity of children dying with these bright, happy colors and bright, happy sounds.
So how many levels and how many settings are you planning to have and think of the children?
Yeah, so for the full build, we're looking at 10 levels, all different environments. That it's kind of like the hazards of suburbia and what the average suburban family might run into. On top of that, then, we'll have custom game modes available, online multiplayer, and we're doing a single-player campaign where the parents are actually in court for gross negligence, and you have to relive each scene as evidence for or against you, and based on your performance, we'll exonerate or find you guilty.
So, alternate endings, I take it.
Yeah, lots of alternate endings based on how well you can keep the kids alive, because we want people replaying these levels and really, really striving for that perfect A-plus score.
That is fucking awesome. So, what I like about the game, too, is that, like I mentioned a little bit earlier, it's not just about, you know, saving children. There's different aspects. One of the last levels that we got to play as is in a supermarket, where the object of that specific level is not just saving children, but to make sure you do not get embarrassed enough to be thrown out of the store.
Yeah, I mean, I think any parent would have experienced it, having a kid having a tantrum or starting a food fight with their siblings. Like, anything like that is going to make you want to leave that store immediately. And we decided, you know what, that should be our game mode. And we built it around that.
Super cool. Now, you are planning to have this release in May.
Yep.
On Steam PC first. Then you're going to move to Mac and Linux, possibly. And then going for consoles, and especially Nintendo Switch, which really surprised me when you mentioned that.
Yeah, we're aiming for it. There's no promises there. We do want to hit as many consoles as we can in that time. But if Nintendo will have us, we would love to be on that platform.
You know, they've actually been very friendly when it comes to indie stuff. So I believe in you guys. I believe that you guys are going to be on the Switch. I believe you'll be on Xbox One, PS4, all the consoles. Think of the children coming this May. Dude, thank you so much for joining me here on One on One. This is a super fun game and a great way for me to start off with PAX East.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming. I hope you really enjoyed it.
One of my absolute favorite game developers of the last couple of years has to be Zoink Games. They're the dudes behind Stick It to the Man and Zombie Vikings, and now they are back with a brand new game for the PS4 and Nintendo Switch, Flipping Death, and I'm here with Michael. Thank you for coming back onto One-on-One. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good. How are you?
I am fantastic, and I just finished playing Flipping Death, the demo version of it, and I've got to say, it's back on cue with the comedy that I loved so much in Stick It to the Man. So, tell us a little bit about the concept of Flipping Death.
Yes, Flipping Death is an adventure platforming game with puzzle elements. You play as Penny, who at the start of the game actually dies. So you need to find out what happened to her, and in order to do that, you need to help different ghosts that are stuck in the afterlife.
So in the demo that I played, I was helping a sea captain who was murdered by his wife because he found out he was having an affair, which he found out because he wound up naming the boat after her. The woman, the mistress. So, for this demo, I had to find the paint, I had to find the dentist to help, pop the paint, I had to find the ghost paint. Is that the correct term?
Ghost paint? Yeah.
Ghost paint.
Yeah, sounds good.
And what I love about the game, too, is, while you're controlling the human characters, as you're switching back and forth between the world of the living and the dead, you get to find out a little bit about what their thought process is like. And what I love is about, when you control the dentist, you find out that the dentist doesn't really want to be a dentist anymore.
Yeah, exactly. The main concept of this game is that, since you're on the other side, which is the dead side, everything that happens on the other side reflects on the living side. So you need to flip between the different sides in order to solve the puzzles. The other side, the dead side, is where most of the platforming takes place, and you can use your sight in order to get across easily. But on the living side, which is a town called Flatwood Peaks, that's where you do most of the environmental puzzles. And as you mentioned, you talk to the different characters. You can listen to their thoughts. And by using their thoughts, listening to them, you can find out what they need, what they want, and what they don't like. So you need to work on both sides in order to solve the different puzzles.
Very cool. And what else? My question is, like, because I know it's like a spiritual successor to Stick It to the Man, and yeah. I'm curious if all of Zoink Games' titles are all connected in, like, one big, giant video game universe.
Actually, I'm not sure. Like, the art and all the characters comes from, most of them come from Klaus, which is the CEO and creative director at Zoink, and I think only he knows what goes on inside of his head. But what we wanted to do with this game is that we wanted to like tie into the whole mind-reading thing and do something more that built on the whole Stick It to the Man game, which we released a couple of years ago. And what we're doing this with Flipping Death is that we're also using Ryan North. So he wrote the script for Stick It to the Man, and he also wrote the script, or is writing the script to Flipping Death, which will... So if people will like Stick It to the Man, they will most likely enjoy Flipping Death as well.
That's fantastic. Now... As I mentioned, you're releasing for PS4 and you're releasing it on Nintendo Switch. So I know you're one of the first like indie developers to be like releasing a title on the Switch. Can you tell me about the challenges that you came from developing for a new console?
Yeah, actually, Switch has been great developing for. I mean, we got the game. We've been working on it for quite some while, so we had a build up and running on before we had got a hold of Switch development kits, but it only took a few days to get the game running on Switch, and development has been good so far. It's really good. From what I heard, like, Unity provides a better like game engine version for us in order to work directly with the Switch, so it's been a really good development process, and we're really happy to be one of the first European developers, well, one of the first in indie developers in the entire world to actually be able to develop and publicly announce a Switch title. But we are doing a multi-platform title, so it's although we're showing Switch here and PS4 here, we're going to try to release on all major platforms.
Right, absolutely, because you want to make sure that you're grabbing every single aspect of the gaming, you know, the gaming crowd of sorts.
Yeah.
So I guess my final question is, first off, when is Flipping Death due to be released?
We're actually working on, as you mentioned, we've done Zombie Vikings, Stick It to the Man. We're also making a fourth game called Fia, which we did talk about last year. We announced it on E3 last year. And it's called Fia, and it's we're not showing it here today, but it's like a 3D platformer game where you are out in a dark Nordic forest. And we're going to release that game this year, and after that, we're going to release Flipping Death.
Oh, okay.
So it depends on when we're releasing Fia. So we don't really know yet about Flipping Death.
All right. Now I'm curious about what Fia is all about. Yes. You dive into what this mystery game that you revealed, you said at E3, correct?
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about this title? You said it's based off in like Nordic, I'm going to say like the Nordic fairy tales of sorts. Cool. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, Fia is a 3D platformer, like in the spirit of Super Mario 64 and all the classic platformer, but it's not as light as happy as Super Mario. It's set in the dark Nordic forest, and you play like a little cub, like a small, almost feral creature, and you're placed in this forest, and you don't really know why you're there and what's happening in the forest, but something is happening, and with no dialogue, you just go out in this world and you will fully explore it and try to learn what happened to you and what's happening to the forest. It's a minimalistic game in that sense that it has no dialogue, it has no like things on the screen except for the actual game, and you get little but no instructions, but it's very moody, atmospheric. We like to compare it to Journey, actually, that in the sense that you're just thrown into this world with no, like, you don't really know why.
All right. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. And where are you planning to release this on?
That's a little too early to say. It's being published by EA, actually, which is kind of cool. We're part of their new program called EA Originals. So they're kind of running the show which platforms. We haven't really decided which ones, but I would say we're probably going to target the major ones for this as well. But it's too early to say.
Oh, that sounds fantastic, and I can't wait to hear a little bit more of it when the time comes. So I guess now my final question is, in regards to Flipping Death, for those who are still unfamiliar with Zoink Games and your style of humor and whatnot, why should they play it?
It's a very unusual platforming adventure game, so it's not like anything out there. So if you're like fan of shows like Simpsons and you want like a zany adventure game with really good art style and fun comedy writing and fun voice acting, you should check Flipping Death out.
Fantastic. And Flipping Death coming soon to all platforms, but first it seems like PlayStation 4, Nintendo Switch, and Fear coming soon as well to be announced.
Fear.
What?
It's Fear. Like yes. Santa Fe, like Faye.
Oh, Fia.
Yes, F-E.
Okay, my bad.
It's actually it's a Swedish word that means fairy.
Oh, all right. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Michael, thank you so much for joining here on 101, and best of luck to you for the rest of PAX East.
Thank you so much.
Isbred Games booth checking out Masquerada Songs and Shadows, which is available now on PC but coming soon to PS4, and I'm here with Gregory Tan from the Witching Hour Studios. Thank you for joining me here on One-on-One. How are you doing today?
I am well. I am cold, but well.
So first off, congrats on releasing Masquerada on PC just a few months ago. How has the feedback been from the fan base?
Oh, it's been amazing. In fact, some of our fans are right here helping us promote the game in PAX. But more than anything else, it's been amazing. We love that we managed to touch hearts, and the amount of people who have emailed me telling me they've cried, I'm a very happy man.
That's fantastic. You're showing off here on PC, but what I was able to try out recently was the PS4 build of Masquerada Songs and Shadows, and I was wondering if you can dive deep into the process of transferring from PC to PS4.
You got to think very, very differently. The controls were, I think, one of the hardest things to transport over.
Oh, yeah.
So one thing I really miss about the mouse and keyboard, tooltip. We don't get tooltip on the PS4. Yeah, so that took a while for us to wrap our heads around, to try and give you the information you need to play the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So beyond that, I think it wasn't too difficult.
All right. So for our listeners who are just first hearing about Masquerada, although I've been hearing about Masquerada for the last couple of years, tell us a little bit about the story and about the masks that you find in this game.
Right. So Masquerada is set in a city called Omba. And in this city, masks are the only way you gain access to magic. Now, here's the thing. No one knows how to make these things anymore. So as far as everyone is concerned, it's a constantly diminishing commodity. So that means that only the very rich and powerful have them. And that creates a strong divide between the rich and the poor. You literally wear your wealth on your face, right? You play Cicero Guevara, a detective, very much the Sherlock Holmes of the city, and he was exiled for some stupid shit he'd done a while ago. And he's back to solve a mystery. And that mystery kind of unfolds and tells you a little bit more about the city, the world, and the masks.
And what was cool is you got some great voice actors in here, and you have Matt Mercer playing the main character.
Yeah, Matt Mercer. Matt is an amazing person. He plays Cicero Guevara. Alongside him, we've got other great people. Jennifer Hale plays one of the characters, as does Ashley Birch and Felicia Day. Also, Dave Fennoy, Lee from The Walking Dead, plays a character too.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about how the gameplay evolves as you dive deeper into the story.
Right, so there are two ways to play the game. If you are playing the game in real time, chances are you'll stick to one character, and you're going to be activating your abilities as and when you feel it best. So it plays very much like a MOBA in that sense.
Yeah.
But if you want to get really tactical, you can hit spacebar, pause the game, and you can actually lay out combinations between the various characters. We also have this thing called elemental tags. What that does is that if one character puts a tag on an enemy, another character can activate it. So let's say someone has a water tag and you hit him with a fire tag, he bursts into steam and he's stunned for a couple of seconds.
Oh, wow. That's great. And what was really cool about this game is you can actually switch in between characters too and between battles.
Yeah, that's right. So the whole idea is that we want to give you choices and play at a pace that you enjoy. Also, while you take three characters into battle at any time, there are five for you to pick from, and each of them has a proper backstory, a proper history and of who they are, and you get to find out how they develop themselves through the game.
That is excellent. Now, I've been meaning to ask, where did the idea for Masquerada first come into fruition?
Two parts to it. Firstly, I was very drunk in Venice, and I was sword fighting my friends along the canal. That's one part of it. The other part is Dungeons & Dragons. I actually ran a Dungeons & Dragons campaign that kind of served as the seed to what Masquerada would become.
That's awesome. So you like had this like Dungeon Master book, and that Dungeon Master book kind of evolved into this video game.
Yeah, pretty much. So I like I said, I was drunk in Venice, thought it was a good idea, made a D&D campaign for my friends. We all sat around and it gave it a lot of time to actually stew and make it a lot better. But more than anything else, I would say that whatever it is right now is way more than what I had in mind before.
Oh, I can imagine, because you've been developing this for the last couple of years. Like I said, the first time I played this was in 2014 when Ismid Games had this really tiny booth, but now it's just expanded into just this big, beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's. I'm very lucky. I got a great team, and they've added so much to it. Between the visuals, all the backgrounds are all hand-drawn.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it makes you feel as though you're walking around a comic book.
Man, that is just, yeah, the artwork in here is just flat out beautiful. You guys should be really proud of yourself.
Thank you so much. I'm really proud of my team.
All right, so my final question is, for those who haven't played Masquerada, why should they dive into it?
If you want a good story, if you want to feel something for the characters that you're playing with, this is for it. Plus, it's going to be a while before Game of Thrones are out. It's going to be out, so you might as well have something to take you through it.
That's actually a great idea. Now, as I mentioned, Masquerada is now available on PC and Mac on Steam, but when can we expect the PS4 version to drop?
It's the latter half of the year, July-ish. But obviously, I don't want to give any confirmed dates because disappointment is a thing that the game industry is very famous for.
That's understandable. But Gregory, thank you so much for joining me here on 101.
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome, and best of luck to you and the rest of the Witching Hour team. And I have to ask, do you have anything new coming up?
I do. Hashtag no comment.
Okay. Thank you once again.
Thank you.
What would happen if Hannibal, B.A. Baracus, and the rest of the A-Team found themselves in World War II? Well, I don't quite know exactly, but there's a video game that shows off really cool one-off scenario of that sort of aspect. It's called Raid World War II. I'm here with Ilium from Lion Game Lion, who is developing this title. Welcome to 101. How are you doing today?
Thank you, kind sir. I'm doing very well, and thank you so much for that awesome introduction. I'm hyped and like pumped up now.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about the concept of Raid World War II. Like, how did this idea come into fruition?
I think you sort of hit the nail on the head there. Not exactly with the A-Team, maybe, what we had in mind. Our team, and also me, a lot of us worked on Payday before. I'm one of the co-founders of Overkill, so I'm one of the original members of Payday 1 and 2.
Oh, and then excellent.
And then when we started this studio in Croatia, we were like, all right, so how do we... Because we really like the dynamic and randomness of Payday and the co-op aspect. And then we said what you just said, but we said it with a different thing. We said, what if we merge Payday and Inglourious Basterds?
That was the other one I was kind of thinking of, but I felt like this was more... A little bit more campier on the aspect than Inglourious Basterds. Inglourious Basterds has more of the, a little bit of the serious aspect, but still a tiny bit of the camp. This feels more like comedic Hogan's Heroes meets A-Team with some nice little kick-ass missions thrown in there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good description.
So tell us a little bit about the characters in this game. Like, so why are they in Germany? Are they just here just to steal some Nazi gold, or is there more to their itinerary?
They're here to earn their freedom, basically. So the premise of the game is that all of our characters, which are four different nationalities, it's a Russian called Kurgan, it's an American called Rivet, it's a British called Sterling, and a German that's named Wolfgang. And they all have a similar background where they're, for whatever reasons, are in jail. And they have a reputation that we won't speak much about. So the war is going really, really bad for the Allies.
Yeah.
And Mrs. White, who is a fifth character that we don't tell much about, she assembles this group of what I like to call degenerates. And she offers them freedom in return of them doing some things for her. So the war is in such dire place that they need these drastic measures and these crazy people to do like suicide missions.
Right, so it's kind of like, we have no idea if you're going to survive, but if you do, yay, good for you. It'll earn yourself your freedom.
Yeah.
Plus, you get to kill a bunch of Nazis while trying to steal
a bunch of gold for your retirement.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, like, the mission that we just tried out today was one of the train mission, or, like, the dynamite mission, trying to take some of the gold, parachute off of there. What other sort of missions can we expect from Raid World War II?
This is always a hard question, because whatever I say, it'll overhype or underhype somebody.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Think of it now.
There's a bunch of stuff. There's, you know, we're burning down castles. We're raising flags. We're destroying zeppelins. We're assassinating officers. We're stealing Enigma machines. We're saving Allied spy from certain death. Etc., etc., etc.
Basically kind of like Captain America-ing the whole aspect of like just punching Nazis, killing Nazis, all for the greater good.
So there's a bunch of different missions, but they all have something in common.
Oh, okay.
So, and let's, you know, the structure of the whole thing is, we need you guys to do a mission. While you're there, there's going to be some gold or shit around that you can steal,
right,
and take that as a, you know, reward. So everything you're doing is grounded in this war effort, you know, turning the war, fucking it up for the Nazis, yep, making it good for the Allies. But you're not, you know, we're not doing Omaha, we're not doing, I don't know, Operation Overlord, we're not the big, grand scenarios.
Right,
we're
right.
The
you're
guys,
not storming Normandy. You're,
yeah, we're the guys who make sure that the train doesn't get to the station, and because of that, Normandy can happen. Because of that, this and this and this. And
so you're basically the behind-the-scenes folks that are trying to make the bigger aspects
exactly
happen.
Exactly.
That's very cool. So what sort of, like, because we're trying out the multiplayer aspect, so how big and vast can we expect the multiplayer? Or is it going to be 4-on-4, 8-on-8, 16-on-16? How vast is this going to be?
So we don't have any versus gameplay. It's all PvE.
Oh, right, right,
we are
right.
Focused on co-op only.
Right, right. That's what I meant to say. Like, my bad on that.
And you can play 4-player co-ops.
Okay.
As a max, but you can play 1 people, 2 people, 3 people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and if you play alone or 2, bots will fill in the rest of the gang.
Right, kind of like when you were talking about Payday, like they did the same.
Yeah, yeah. We feel that that's a really good thing that works, and we didn't want to, you know.
Right, you know, I have to actually give it props for you guys for actually making some very good, coherent AI in Payday when you had your allies. Because I can't tell you how many times that I played a multiplayer game, had bots on my team, and they just did nothing.
Yeah.
In the Payday games, when you were there working on those games, you actually made it seem like I was playing with human characters. So much props to you guys for that.
Thank you. I think that has a lot of to do that they... I mean, that's a nice thing of you to say, and there's a lot of people who agree. There's a shitload of people who don't agree. But in the end, you can never make an AI teammate that everybody will be happy with.
Right.
Because he can't listen to you. It's not another human being where you can say, hey, Johnny, come help me do this, and he will... this is just a program.
Exactly.
So it's really hard.
It is hard, but I think you guys did a really good job with, yeah, with
thank
that
you
aspect.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. So, Raid World War II, is there a release date yet, and do we have, like, any news on like PC, consoles? Where can we find this game when it's finally unleashed?
Yeah, so the release date as of now is summer 2017, so it's a little vague, I'm sorry. That's
that's not vague. At least people know it's coming very soon.
Yeah, and it will be coming on the PC, Steam, PS4, and Xbox One.
Excellent. Fantastic. Ilium, thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One Raid World War II. Expect a very fun and campy adventure with some people who are going to make the Allies look so much better. Do you want hardcore violence in outer space? because I think I found the game just for you, and then it's called Mother Gunship, and I'm here with Joe Mirabelle of Terrible Posture Games. Welcome to One-on-One. How are you doing today?
Fine. How are you?
I am doing great. First of all, tell us a little bit about Terrible Posture Games.
So, Terrible Posture Games is basically just me. I used to work on much larger, bigger budget AAA games, and the last studio I worked for went disastrously out of business. And so I was like, all right, if I'm going to work for a company that's going to go out of business, at least it might as well be my own company. So I started Terrible Posture Games, and I started working on a kind of an experimental game called Tower of Guns, which was pretty much just me, and I was figuring I would work on it for a year and then maybe go back to AAA afterwards. And instead, that game did well enough that it started being played by a lot more people than I thought were going to play it. And it went from being the sabbatical to being a career. That attracted the attention of companies like Grip Digital, who helped me bring Tower of Guns to consoles. And after we released on consoles, we were like, you know, we had a lot of fun working together. We worked well together. Maybe we should try and work on something else together. And so that project became Mother Gunship. We're co-developing it from the ground up.
And this is the first time you're actually showing it off. You just revealed it, and I'm overhearing you've had just tremendous response since its reveal.
Yeah, it's been pretty exciting. I mean, we announced it about 3 weeks ago, and we did show it at GDC, but GDC is not really a public conference.
Right.
So we had it there playing on part of the Xbox Lobby Bar and part of the Intel booth, but it was kind of just to the industry people. Here's the first time that the public can get their hands on it. This is the first time that we've been able to see what the average gamer, if you will, thinks of the game. And the reception's been pretty warm, I would say.
That was the next question I was about to ask you, because, man, this game is very fast-paced. So you just dive right into it, and just things all over the place start shooting the crap out of you. But what I like about it is there's this whole sort of strategy where you gotta, like, evade and jump, and it's super fast-paced, and I love it to death.
Well, thank you very much. That's actually something that... So working on Tower of Guns, which is a very similar kind of game, we took a hard look at what works well in that, and we want to explore those mechanics further. And so Mother Gunship is taking the tower gun mechanics, like the bullet hell aspect or the randomized level aspect or the mobility aspects of that game, and we want to really refine them. We know what we're doing now, we know what works, and we know what doesn't work. And so we're stripping away all those elements from Tower of Guns that didn't work and making Mother Gunship a better game, a stronger game, taking in all the things that people were asking for, like being able to play co-op or having a better progression system or the crazy gun crafting system. These are all things that we've learned from Tower of Guns, and now we're applying forward to this game to make this game much bigger than that game ever was.
So tell us a little bit about the gun crafting system. Like, what sort of like weaponry can you create with this game?
You can basically create anything you can imagine. Most first-person shooters are a little bit more serious or a little bit more grim in their tone. And so if they have weapon customization at all, it tends to be very restrictive or very cosmetic, which is fine. I love all the different kinds of ways you can customize in games, but I wanted to go with something that was a little bit more over the top and a little bit more modular. I wanted the player basically to be given a bunch of Legos, and they could build whatever they wanted out of it. So basically, if you wanted to have a gun that had 13 barrels that were across the bottom of the screen, you could build that. The downside, though, is that that gun may cost a lot of ammo to fire. And so you may only be able to fire it once or twice.
Correct, because there's this whole... Because while you have infinite ammo, you can only shoot it for such a very specific amount of time before you have to wait for it to cool off.
Basically, yeah. It's like an overheat mechanic.
And, exactly.
In between missions, you can actually go back to your headquarters and you can upgrade that. So you could upgrade the recharge rate. You could upgrade the cap amount of it. You could upgrade the delays between when it actually kicks in the recharge. So there's a lot of ways that you can begin to make more crazy weapons become more viable as you progress through the game. So that 13-barreled rocket launcher may not have been practical in the beginning of the game, even though you'll always be able to fire it at least once. But you know, after you've played a couple of missions, after you've upgraded a few times, all of a sudden that gun is now a perfect complement for your right hand, while your left hand is something that's maybe more of a rapid-fire, smaller gun or something.
Correct, absolutely. So what's the craziest one that you have created so far?
Well, there's two that are pretty crazy that we've made that we nicknamed. These guns are really quick to build, so oftentimes we'll just build them and tear them down again and build them up again. So, you know, we don't know name most of the games, or most of the guns, rather. Yeah. But we did name one that we called the Window, which was basically it bordered the entire gameplay window with barrels, and that was a lot of fun. And then there's another one called the Beast that we built that was in the trailer that is pretty massive. And I think it probably had 7 or 8 barrels. About half of them were laser barrels. So that one was, when you fired that, it felt like it was a little bit like 4th of July fireworks going off.
Ah, very nice, very nice. So tell us a little bit about the story aspect of Mother Gunship, because I know there's this computer that's kind of, I won't say that it's taunting you, but it's kind of like telling you, you probably shouldn't be here, you're going to die.
So the story is, basically, we're not talking too much about the story yet, but the basic gist is that you are one of the last survivors of a resistance against an alien invasion to Earth. The alien invasion was successful. It's these robot alien, data hoarding, kleptomaniac, robotic maniac machines, and they basically took over all the Earth, and they've got their armada camped outside, and you have to take down that armada one ship at a time. That's, each ship is basically a randomly generated mission, and you want to fight through those ships one at a time, work your way towards the final ship, which is the Mother Gunship. That is the big boss of the game, and that thing is 100 times bigger than any other ship in the game.
So I take it that's the Mother Gunship, the man with the skull and face. That's what he's going to look like when you go up against him?
Well, we're not talking too much about that yet. The actual ship itself, you can see in the demo, the ship itself is pretty massive and has a similar feel, but it's not the giant skull and space kind of thing.
Oh, okay. So I know that you guys are very early in development. There's no release date yet officially. You guys are going for PC, and I'm going to guess consoles as well?
Yep, PC and consoles. It's actually was running at the lobby bar at GDC, which is the Xbox bar. And it is, it was runnable there. People were playing it. They were having fun. But it, you know, we still have a while left to work on the game. So we're not talking about the announcement date, or sorry, the release date, man, the release date quite yet. Sorry,
it's okay.
It's conference voice, man.
No, I totally get that. I was almost losing my voice on the first day of the event, man.
Yeah, we're only halfway done too.
I know. So I guess my final question is, why should people dive into Mother Gunship? Why should they check this game out?
Well, hopefully they like supporting indie games that are a little bit unique and have kind of a twist to them. But we like to think that people will really want to dive into this game, not just for playing it once or twice, but also for the longevity of the game. There's a lot of roguelite elements that keep people excited about the game, playing the game more often than just once or twice. There's a lot of community aspects that we're not going to talk about quite yet, but we will be talking about in the future. And there's lots of ways that people can feel like they're being challenged as they improve as a player, the game opens up and offers them new challenges to keep them engaged. So there's lots of surprises in the game. There's lots of unique experiences they can have in the game. And because of the over-the-top tone and the crazy nature of the gameplay itself, it's a little bit different than what they've experienced in most first-person shooters.
That sounds all fantastic. Joe, thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. Mother Gunship coming soon to PC and consoles everywhere. Prepare yourself for some hardcore violence and outer space.
Thank you so much for having me, and have a good PAX East.
You too.
Everybody's talking loud. I can't stand the fucking sound.
Peeking out in the USA.
Yelling at the other guy. Arguing over the pipe.
Folks, when's the last time you played a video game where you took control of a snake? And no, I am not talking about lamias, I'm talking about actual full-on snakes. Probably never, right? Well, that's about to change thanks to an upcoming video game from Sumo Digital called Snake Pass. And I'm joined with Seb. Thank you so much for joining me here on 101. How is your PAX East going for you?
Oh, it's been fantastic so far. It's the first time we show the game on American soil to the public, and our booth has just been super busy all week, and everywhere I look I see smiley faces and people who really get absorbed by the game, almost hypnotized by the snake. So yeah, I think we couldn't have hoped for anything better than this.
Now tell us a little bit about the concept of Snake Pass. Like, when did this idea come to you?
October 2015, Sumo Digital decided to do an internal game jam, because we're a big company. We make AAA games for Microsoft and Sony. Like, we've worked on Sonic All-Star Racing, Outrun 2, currently doing Dead Island 2.
Yep.
Lots of big games, but we always wanted to do like our own little thing. So in October 2015, we had our first internal game jam. Everybody was allowed to do whatever they wanted. And right around that time, I was experimenting with Unreal, because I had to learn Unreal for the project that I was moving on to. And as I was playing around with that, I sort of randomly ran into this idea of trying to make a physical rope. And while making the rope, I realized that the smoothness of the physics was something I'd never seen before. So I just decided to make the rope. Initially, I wondered if I could make a game where the main character was a rope. And then when I saw it moving, I was like, this is just like a snake. And I started making it more and more like a snake and adding, like, because I've got a background in biology and I had to pet snakes in university. I know exactly how snakes work and how muscles work. So I sort of slowly started adding more and more of this natural behavior of a muscle into it. And the more I approached reality, the more it was actually starting to behave like a snake and was able to do things that a snake can do. And then I realized that it was actually really fun to play. So I won the game jam with that. And well, a little bit more than a year later, here we are with Snake Pass.
That is awesome. Now, here's what's cool about this. It's a platformer. But when you think of platformers, okay, you're jumping up and down and everything. Snakes can't jump.
No, there's no jumping.
So what you've got to do is you got to slither up and down and solve all these puzzles that way. And I think that's very unique. No one's really done anything like that.
No, it's... And at first glance, it looks like a familiar, maybe Nintendo 64 area type of game. But... Yeah, once you start playing, you realize it's unlike anything you've ever played. Like, we had to completely come up with a new control scheme because the gameplay is just, there's nothing like it that plays like this. It's all about manipulating gravity, friction, and using your body and the power of the muscles in your body in a correct way, the way a real snake would, to get around an interesting environment.
Now, tell me about the story in Snake Pass. So, what is happening in this video game?
There's a simple story. Noodle the snake is trying to get to the top of the mountain to meet up with his friends who have all left there for the summer migration. You wake up too late as usual, and as you try to catch up with them, you realize that something or someone has removed the keystones from the portals, sort of stopping you from getting there. So in order for you to get to the top of the mountain in every level, you have to find the three keystones, put them back in the portal, and slowly make your way up the mountain. And as you do this, you slowly find out who or what is trying to stop you from getting there.
Now, I've got to ask, because I'm thinking of the mountain aspect, are these friends other members of the Chinese Zodiac?
Yes.
Because there's a very similar story regarding not a snake, but a cat who was left out from being part of the Chinese Zodiac because he woke up late.
Sorry, I'm not even sure what you're talking about.
Oh, no, it's an actual Chinese or Japanese story.
Okay, no, I don't...
So it reminded me a little bit of that.
Right, no, it has nothing to do with that, I'm afraid.
Now, the game is coming out in just a couple weeks, so, like, how big of a story, how big of a tale can people expect from Snake Pass when it's released?
It's 15 levels, and we aim to create about 8 to 10 hours of gameplay. Depending on how good you are, it could be a little bit more, it could be a little bit less. And also, if you decide to go for all the collectibles, it will probably take you a little bit longer than that.
That's fantastic. It's coming out on PS4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, and PC.
Yeah.
So my final question is, why should people experience Snake Pass?
Again, we gamers are really spoiled nowadays, and we've been playing the same things over and over in different colors and in different variations. This is completely different. It's a gameplay that you haven't played before, and you'd be surprised how incredibly enjoyable it is to play as a snake. So you should really try it out.
Seb, thank you so much for joining me here on One on One. Snake Pass from Sumo Digital, on all consoles and PC. Yeah. And man, best of luck. And I can't wait to see what you guys are working on, because I'm a fan of Dead Island, so I'm really stoked to see what you're doing with Dead Island 2 as well.
Right, I'm afraid I can't say anything.
I know you can. I'm just telling you that I can't wait. You know, folks, just because you're a geek doesn't mean you don't have to be stylish. And Nerds clothing is absolutely the best when it comes to that. And of course, everybody knows Nerds stands for Nobody Ever Respects Dark Society. And I'm here with my buddy, Gregory Nunez, longtime childhood friend and one of the workers over here at Nerds Clothing. Thank you once again for joining me here this year on One on One. How are things going with you?
Everything's actually going fantastic. As you're standing in our booth, we doubled our size in the booth. We had a huge positive feedback from last year. Over the year, we've done some really good deals, and everything's moving forward, man. The ball's rolling. People are still coming back, can't find their size because we're selling out so many things. So, like, it's a good sign for me. Unfortunately, it's bad for them, but it's definitely a good sign for us here at Nerds.
Now, one of the big deals that you had this past year was the WWE, and maybe this guy here, Eric Nerds Medina, can talk a little bit about that.
What are we talking about? WWE Nerds.
Yeah, man, something that happened around June of last year. Had the opportunity to meet with corporate regarding a co-branded deal. So I actually flew out to Money in the Bank in Vegas and met with them, with a couple of licensing people, buddies of mine, and managed to land a two-year contract with WWE and Ripple Junction to make shirts. So yeah, it's been pretty cool. It's on the website, WWE website, and you know, sometimes wrestlers wear it to the ring and not. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen the New Day wear it quite a few times. You must be so pumped every time you see that happen.
Yeah, it's definitely rewarding. Yeah, it's just surreal. I mean, I don't think it's hit me yet, because when I see it, I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then just keep my day, you know, keep on going. But yeah, you know, it's just, it's crazy how far we've come, and it's great to, like, share it with my friends. So that's what we're doing.
I would totally say this is totally Vince McMahon approved, but depending on right now if he's a heel or a face, that might bite you in the ass.
Yeah, right? It's definitely you know, if he ever gave me the thumbs up on anything, I'd feel amazing. You know, and maybe to ask him to stun me at the same time.
The Vince McMahon stunner.
Yeah, the old sloppy one.
So outside of WWE, what else has been new with Nerds Clothing?
That's pretty much it as of right now. We've been pretty tied up with that. Trying to do more cons. We're over here in Boston right now at PAX.
We're coming into a few other stores on the West Coast. So we've been on Tilly's. We actually sold out the TJ Perkins on the Tilly's website, which was huge.
Hot Topic.
Hot Topic is another one. So everything's been going like really well. We're introducing more different styles. Got jackets. Working on some stylish joggers. Something to make it different. I don't just want to make the same exact thing that you'll walk into Target or something and see. Like, so we're trying to make sure that we're covering all aspects before we introduce new looks with the Nerds brand on it. So.
Of course, because you don't, like you said, you want there to be a uniqueness to the brand. And I feel like that's what Nerds does a great job with. I mean, nobody's ever seen like a logo character like the man, like this dude with glasses, the geek such. Because that makes it your trademark. As soon as everybody sees that, oh, it's Nerds Clothing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then he's just starting to take a body of his own. Everybody's like, especially with making these deals, seeing them on the WWE website, people are seeing the logo more and more. A ton of these like wrestlers and even like just the customers is just sharing it constantly. So people are coming in saying that they've seen it from this place, seen it from this website, and it's crazy that they're not just seeing it from the conventions; they're actually seeing it from everyday, like just scrolling through your internet. So it's becoming bigger and bigger. We want to introduce them into other. Want to definitely open up for more kids, more women's side cut shirts, and this has given us the opportunity to do so.
And maybe like a female version of your character.
Which we do have. We have the female Dogster. She only makes appearances every once in a while. So she'll be coming out the woodworks very soon, though.
That sounds great. Now, I know that PAX East is ending very, very soon, so I want to know how the whole PAX experience has been for the both of you.
Well, the funny thing is that when it comes closer to a close, we get trampled in our booth. Location. They start clearing out from the opposite side and they pretty much push towards us. So best experience is like us being able to get the last sale around here. And they usually buy in bulk. So
now I guess my next question is, or my final question is, what can we expect next from Nerds Clothing?
We're definitely working on jerseys, more spring style jackets, joggers, sweatpants are definitely a must. We have a Super Lame Boy shirt that we're going to introduce in a hoodie as well. And it's just we're going to keep on growing. And we luckily with conventions like this, we're dealing with people face to face, and we see exactly what they like, and see exactly what they don't like. and we go from there. It's never something that, what would I wear? It's no, it's like, what will the people wear?
Exactly. And dude, thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One Nerds Clothing. Where's the best place besides the WWE website where they can find out more info on this?
All right, so WWE website obviously is a big plus, but you can also go on to Nerds Clothing. It's spelled exactly how it is, at nerdsclothing.com, and we have all our links and everything right in the website.
That's fantastic. Greg, thank you again for being here on One-on-One. Please, for the love of God, for all you geeks, nerds, and dweebs out there, grab yourselves a t-shirt or a hat from Nerds Clothing, because, my God, it fucking sounds... I'm actually wearing one right now.
Yeah, don't get Zap shirt. All red. Evan, you're looking really good in it.
Thank you very much.
Listen to my thoughts. I do away with celebrity endorsed sponsorism and keep the people guessing. Get a buy diesel engine to cut my carbon emissions. Further my career by trading favors with age ravers. You know, use the marxism. But I sat on my black ass sucking on sassafras in my apartment bitching. Last year, you were posing on the hood of a Lamborghini in the Gucci glasses and a tan bikini. Dated Mega White and Eden Terry Sue. I'm trapping.
Have you ever wanted to be part of a 1980s slasher horror film? Well, there's a game that's perfect for that, and it's currently out on Steam, so you can actually play it right now as soon as you listen to this podcast. We've got Dead by Daylight here at the Starbreeze Studios booth. I'm here with Mike. Thank you for joining me here on One-on-One. How are you doing today?
I'm very good, thank you.
First of all, congrats on the success so far in Dead by Daylight. It seems like it's been a surefire hit since it's officially launched here on Steam.
Yep.
How have you guys been feeling about the feedback from the fans of the game?
I mean, we're as close as we can to our community. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of great people, and we're trying to involve them as much as we can. So the feedback is super important for us, and we've changed a few things. Some people like, some people don't, and then we're going forward. We're bringing a lot of new stuff all the time. We just came out with a big update, a free update, with Left 4 Dead characters.
Oh, nice.
So that was very exciting. And here at PAX right now, we're showing the PS4 build for the first time, which you just played.
Excellent, yes. And I just played the PS4 build. I got to play the serial killer, got to run around. Well, let's just say there weren't any survivors afterwards.
You managed to get them all.
Yes, I managed to get them all.
Well done.
Well done, in a sense. Killing is bad, folks. Remember that. So, how did the idea for Dead by Daylight first come into fruition?
I mean, it's been almost 10 years in the making for us.
Really?
We've been kicking that thing around for a while, tried a different way here and there. We had concepts drawn and things we tried. It actually, one of the offshoots of that became a little-known game called Naughty Bear.
Yes, and I actually was a little bit of a fan of that one.
I'm a huge fan. I worked on the Naughty Bear Panic in Paradise, which was a digital download on the Xbox 360 and PS2. And so the idea was always there. It's sort of inspired by the slasher movies. Naughty Bear was very, very silly.
Yes.
But it was also, there was a little element of serious in there. It was kind of intense and grotesque, but... For us, it was
like a black comedy of sorts.
Exactly.
Like an Irish comedy.
We still managed to get some of that humor true, but it's a lot more serious. The treatment is serious because we want the emotions and the feelings that people get to be genuine and very intense. So playing the survivor gets you stressed and your heartbeat goes up. Playing the killer, you don't get scared.
Right.
It's a fun ride, but you do get annoyed. You get frustrated. You even get, like, offended sometimes that people are running away from you.
How dare you? I'm trying to kill you. Hold still.
Yeah, that's it. And so it's essentially two completely different games that we made there. But it works very well, and it allowed us to go and reach out into either, like, mythology and the things that scare people, nightmares that are as old as time almost. And then we also went to get some established licenses. There's Left 4 Dead, but... We also have Michael Myers.
Right, which was what I was about to bring up. But having Michael Myers, such an iconic slasher killer in this game, it must be like a childhood dream of yours.
It is a trip. I mean, we all have our favorites. We all have the one license we'd like to get. And it might happen, but we're being very, very careful and very, you know, we pace ourselves because we don't want to dilute the story that we have to say.
Right.
And we bring out our own killers. I mean, we have... A lot of the killers that we put in the game are our own ideas, our own inspirations. We also get stuff from the folklore from different places, whether it's Russia or China. Every little corner of the world has their monsters haunting their dreams, and we want to be able to use that.
All right, be honest with me. I know you have Michael Myers. who else is on your wish list?
I mean, obviously the Holy Trinity would be amazing. So that's Michael, Jason, and Freddy.
Yeah.
We'll see about that.
Right.
My personal, I'd love to get a Cenobite in the game.
A Cenobite?
From Hellraiser.
Oh, damn!
They would fit in right with there. But we'll see.
Yes.
Those are not promises. They're just wild ideas we're throwing around.
They're dreams. Yep. And you know what? Dreams can come true.
Yeah.
So long as you work hard on it.
Exactly.
Although for some of these players, it's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, well, they can go again.
Yes, exactly. And who knows? They might get a turn to be the killer sometime around.
Yeah.
So, I know you guys have released it on PC, as I mentioned it. Do we have a set release date yet for the Xbox One and PS4 versions?
It's summer.
Summer.
That's about as much as we can say right now. So,
you know what? Summer isn't too far away.
Yeah, there you go. It's almost there.
Yes.
So it's going to be Xbox One and PS4.
That is fantastic. So, my final question is, why, for those who are still hesitant on it, why should they dive into Dead by Daylight? Dead by Daylight, sorry.
It's so much fun. The intensity of that game never stops. I mean, the progression takes a long time, getting all the perks and add-ons and items and all that. But seriously, just the first game, the first 5-10 minutes, you felt the rush.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about. Those moments are magical.
Right, because when you start out with the game, it's kind of like, all right, you're looking at the premises, you're seeing what can be to your advantage, what can be at your disadvantage, and then just as soon as you start seeing the victims, that's when you start to dive head on to the craziness.
It's people against people. So when you're playing on Steam, you're matched with strangers, and there's no communication. It's they're there because they're better AI than any AI we could ever make.
Right, exactly.
Also, it's stupid cheap. $20 on Steam, and right now it's 40% off, so it's, what, $12? Stupid.
Yeah, exactly. So, thank you so much for being here one-on-one, Dead by Daylight, on Steam right now for PC, coming soon this summer on PS4 and Xbox One. Get ready for the bloodshed. No PAX East is complete in my book without a visit to the HyperX booth. I'm here with Mark Tekanoff, who is showing off some pretty kick-ass new tech that HyperX is showing off. Welcome to One-on-One. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good. How about yourself?
I am doing fantastic. So, first and foremost, as I've said in the past, I've always been immensely impressed with HyperX. Such top-notch quality for affordable prices. And the thing that really impressed me last year was your launching of the Cloud Stinger. $50 for probably one of the finest headsets you can get. So you guys must be really proud of yourselves with that one.
Thank you very much. Actually, a couple days ago in Germany, we received a reward for the design. It's called the IF Design Award, where for the design of the Stinger. And we're very happy to see that. We'll get that award. So, yeah, not only is it a great product, it sounds great, but people look at it and say it's something that's it's a very excellent manufactured design product.
Dude, that is fantastic. Congratulations to everybody over there.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the engineering guys really are very happy that they're getting global recognition for the design that they did.
You guys deserve every bit of recognition because, like I said, you guys have been phenomenal when it comes to the tech stuff, from the headsets to the keyboards. And we're going to dive into some of the new stuff. And one of the things that you're showing off, or rather, you're secretly showing off right now because you technically can't reveal it until this coming Monday, and that is the new Revolver.
Yes, so we're coming up with a new Revolver family product called the Revolver S, which is our surround sound version of the product. So essentially we took our original Revolver design from last year and made some design improvements to it, gave it a little more of a professional look and feel to it. We widened the headband to give it more comfort for longer playtime. But the main key point here is the new USB dongle, which is a plug-and-play Dolby surround sound version of our USB audio dongle. So you plug it into any USB 2.0 system, push a button, and Dolby's running it. You get that real wide, realistic sound that you would typically hear in the movies. gameplay or live recorded songs.
That's fantastic. And I myself just tested it out here at PAX East. What I love about it is that, especially when you're playing with music, it has that sort of engrossing feeling when you're listening to the songs. Like I know it's one thing to say, oh, it sounds like the band's right in the room. It feels like the band's right there in my room, but here, not only does it sound like the band's right there in the room, but it feels like you can like pinpoint every single separate instrument, and you can tell where they're located while they were recording it.
Yeah, the design of the headset allows for a very wide sound stage, which allows you to reveal sounds from different locations very well. And on top of that, by using the Dolby Surround sound algorithm from Dolby, the combination of the two gives you that realistic experience as if you're there in the concert or in gameplay, that you're actually in the field and hearing things happen all around you.
Right, and yes, I also got to check out a video clip of Battlefield 4 that was showing off some of the aspects of what you're gaming. And I've noticed like you do a great job with like amplifying some of the key sound effects with the HyperX, especially when it comes like the bullet. Like whenever I play a video game and you're shooting the bullets and such, it sounds a little bit muted, but here it feels like it goes like right through you. Like it feels like it's being shot right. I don't want to say right in the ear because that might frighten away some people, but. It's you do amplify some of the most key aspects of it, and I feel like that's like one of the coolest things about HyperX.
Yeah, we put a lot of time and effort in making sure that whatever we do, number one, it's very comfortable when you wear it. So comfort is number one, but the sound quality, being able to give you a 3D experience, is absolutely something we're looking forward to doing. Not only with the entry level Stinger, but all the way up to the $149.99 for the brand new Revolver S.
Right. Now I gotta ask, and I forgot to bring this up. Like, how does this work with something like, say, the Oculus or PlayStation VR?
Okay, well, this particular product uses the USB audio dongle. If you want to plug it into an Oculus or an HTC or something like that, what you can do is you can disconnect the headset from the USB audio dongle and plug the headset directly into that VR or AR experience.
Okay, cool. Because I know they do the whole virtual, I know it's like virtual surround from within, so you're still getting the same sort of aspect of that.
Yeah, so in that case, you would be using the surround sound that comes off out from them. They would provide the 3D sound, and the Revolver S headset would then provide you the sound so you can hear the actual 3D effect.
Right, but if you're using the USB aspect of it, what I like too is that, and this is from like what you've done in the past too with HyperX, is like you can isolate the two sounds, the game sounds and the chat sounds, and you can figure out like, okay, I don't really want to hear the chat, turn that down, I want to hear more of the game. And you do that without losing any of the quality of either sound.
Well, I think another way of saying this is that when you turn on the surround sound dongle, there's a separation of all the different types of sounds that you're hearing. The separation not only by location, but also by the bass, mid, or high frequencies, so that the crispness of the shots or the rumble as the tag goes by, you're able to experience all of those things by using it.
That's fantastic. And outside of the headset, you're also showing off the keyboards and a new mouse that you're actually going to be launching next month.
Well, so we're basically showing off the Allo FPS gaming keyboards, and we use the Cherry MX switches, whether it's the blue, red, or brown versions of it. And like you mentioned, we do have a sample of the mouse that we revealed at CES that we're showing here, just to show people that we are expanding our product line, and we're going to include everything basically that a gamer needs will be available by summer from us, whether it's a headset, keyboard, or any of the other accessories that go along with it, including mouse pads.
Right. But what I like too, because I was testing out the mouse itself, is like, as you pointed out, you could do it as like the paw or the claw aspect of it, and there's this instant comfort that I feel on both sides of it.
So we actually put, not only do we design it for that purpose, but we also work with a number of gaming teams around the world, and when they come into our California office, we have them try out our samples, our prototypes, and we get inputs from them to tell us what they like and how they experience it. So we took their opinions and we implemented them into the design.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, I gotta ask, outside of all this stuff, what else is HyperX working on, if you can talk about it?
I mean, we're continuing to expand our accessories line. You now know that we have at least four or five different types of gaming headsets available. Later on this year, we're gonna be announcing some additional headsets. Same on the game board side. We began with Alloy FPS, three different colors of the switches. We're going to continue to add more and more keyboards and begin to add mice and other things. So basically, give people options by price and by performance of what person needs or wants.
Now, what is the release date for the Cloud S?
Cloud is the Revolver S is March 13th. So this coming Monday after the show, it will be launching and shipping, all the normal ETA retail locations.
Wow, so just like automatically, as soon as you announce it, boom, it's going out to everybody.
Basically, we're beginning to put inventory into the channel right now, and so this week you'll be able to buy it at some of your favorite locations.
That is fantastic, dude. Thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. And for more information, people could go to HyperX.com, correct?
Exactly. Or HyperXGaming.com is our address.
Okay, terrific. Dude, thank you once again for joining me here on One-on-One, and best of luck to the rest of PAX East.
Lord, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the show.
We will.
Today. One time of your life. Gonna do it. Now. Don't wait and live. Today.
Play your cards right, and you will be dealt a hand of goodness. Play them wrong, and you might find yourself at the brink of death. I am here at the Defiant booth for Hand of Fate 2, and I'm here with Lee May from Defiant. Thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. How are you doing today?
Really, really well. Thanks so much for coming by.
You are welcome, and let me tell you something. As a fan of the first game, I am so stoked that we are diving right back into this world.
Thanks so much, yeah. We're really looking forward to getting people back into the Hand of Fate world and interacting with the dealer again and learning more about the game of life and death.
That is terrific. Now, before we continue, just a bit of a heads up, there may be a couple of spoilers for people who haven't played the first Hand of Fate game, because this takes place 100 years after the fact of this.
That's right, yes. So at the end of Hand of Fate 1, you do manage to defeat the dealer. And so in Hand of Fate 2, he has crawled his way back from Oblivion. And he is now enlisting a new hero to help him defeat the protagonist from Hand of Fate 1.
And as it's been noted, that the protagonist has become a bit of a tyrant, taking over the entire world, which is kind of the fault of the dealer, so he's trying to right that wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think righting the wrong is kind of incidental to, like, just regaining control of the game of life and death, but, like, I mean, it seems like his intentions are true. Sure, we can trust him.
Maybe this time around.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how the gameplay has evolved ever since the first Hand of Fate.
Well, in the first Hand of Fate, we had a hybrid of deck-building, tabletop role-playing games, and then action RPG combat. People really enjoyed the storytelling. They enjoyed unlocking new cards. But at the same time, we felt like we weren't really able to tell truly rich stories just because of the piecemeal nature of that. And we felt like we weren't able to get people to properly investigate and explore their deck. Most people, rather than thinking too strategically about the deck, would be maintaining the cards they liked and then just moving in new things as they came along. So for Hand of Fate 2, what we've got is we've replaced our progression system with a board of missions. Each mission tells the story of how your character is on their way to go and defeat the Kallus, the hero from Hand of Fate 1. And each mission also has a deck-building objective tied into it. So for some of them, you might be trying to raise funds to be able to bribe a bunch of thieves to solve a murder mystery. Others, you're dealing with a famine and trying to beat up a necromancer. So you have to build your encounters and your equipment to be able to handle these threats. And so we're finding that, now people are actually engaging with the deck. They're really getting into it. They're really enjoying themselves.
Now, one of the big aspects of Hand of Fate 2 is the concept of chance. Because with chance, you can either succeed, you can either fail, you can either get gold, or you can have some life taken away from you. How has that evolved since the first game?
So, in the original game, whenever we had any kind of, chance come into the storytelling, we would have a four-card Monty where you'd be, you'd have success and failure cards that you would then have to track with your eyes. People hated those. They were brutal. They're back because we like to frustrate people. But we've added a few more mini games as well as the Fort Guard Monty. We now have dice games. We've now got a timing based pendulum game, as well as a Wheel of Fortune or Misfortune. So those are also all affected by our new companion characters. They'll all break the game in your favor in each of the individual minigames.
That's really cool. Now let's dive deep into the companion aspect of Hand of Fate 2, which is brand new to this game.
Yes.
So how does each companion basically help out your protagonist? How does what they do affect what you do?
So your companions are unlocked over the course of play. We've got four of them in the release at the moment. There are three that we've been showing off at PAX. They will join you in battle, so they all fight in different ways. One of them is a wizard, has ranged attacks and shields you. One of them is kind of a brawler with a pistol and a sword. Another one is just a massive, massive dude covered in knives. But on top of that, they also have their own story cards. Story cards will get folded into your deck. They'll unlock, you know, new stuff, new stories, progress the tale of the companions. And as mentioned before, yeah, they also bend the rules of the game in your favor.
Now, how long of a campaign? Because the last one was 13 chapters, correct?
Yes.
So how much bigger is this one?
So we've got 22 challenges in this game. We're aiming for roughly an equivalent amount of gameplay. So it'll still be, you know, a campaign that takes about, you know, 15 to 20 hours to get through. But because of the the challenge-based nature of it, there's probably going to be a lot more replayability. You know, you'll be able to succeed and progress, but you can then go back and, you know, try and unlock additional stuff by, you know, increasing your score, improving your abilities, that sort of thing.
Well, this is all sounding fantastic. Now, my final question is, when can we expect Hand of Fate 2 to drop?
So, at the moment, the release date is a little bit nebulous. I can tell you that in April we're doing our limited access beta. Once that wraps up, we'll be able to actually talk about a proper release date. But it's definitely coming out soon. Definitely coming out before the end of the year. Well before the end of the year, or else we're all in trouble.
Well, let me just tell my listeners, if you haven't yet, first dive into the very first Hand of Fate game. It's on Xbox One, PS4, and PC. Highly recommend it. One of my favorite indie games the last couple years. Same platforms as before?
That's right, yes. Simultaneous release on PC, PS4, and Xbox One for this one as well.
That is terrific. Dude, thank you so much here for joining on One-on-One. Hand of Fate 2 coming soon. This one's going to be awesome, I can tell you right here. I love the new combat aspect, too.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we put a lot of effort in improving our combat engine. It's a lot more dynamic, a lot more reactive, and just a lot more fun now.
Absolutely. Dude, thank you once again, and I can't wait to dive into more of Hand of Fate 2. The Tiny Build booth. I'm joined with producer Carrie Shiro. Thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. How's PAX East been treating you?
PAX East has been great. I believe this is our 10th show. This is our 10th PAX, actually, and every year we get a little bit bigger. We have fans return to us and are excited for kind of our lineup. This year it's really special for us because we have a lot of next games from a lot of our developers. So we've got Party Hard 2, which is a true sequel. We've got Phantom Trigger, which is a second game, the next game we're publishing from the Divide by Sheep team.
Okay.
And we have Graveyard Keeper, which is the Punch Club team's next game as well.
Ah, fantastic. So why don't we first dive into a couple of games that we were taught that we just went hands-on with. A game that actually was just released this past weekend called Streets of Rogue. So tell us a little bit about the concept of this game.
Sure. Streets of Rogue is kind of our take on the roguelike genre. For us, we didn't see the need to create basically another Binding of Isaac clone. That game is fantastic already, and we
right.
all love that game. So when we set out to actually think about, well, if we wanted to do a roguelike, what would that look like? We want to kind of find something unique in that space. What we found was Matt Dabrowski, who developed developed Streets of Rogue by himself. And it is it's a roguelike first and foremost, but it's kind of a mega game is what we're calling it. The game launched this past weekend on Friday. It launched with about 20 character classes. And all those character classes interact with each other in really fun and crazy ways. So, for example, there's a scientist and a gorilla.
Yep.
And you played as the gorilla earlier.
Yeah, I played as the gorilla.
Yeah, so if you had a scientist buddy with you, he could shoot you up with drugs and make you grow real big and rampage throughout the entire level.
Oh, my God.
So there's a lot of really fun synergies you can play with your friends. It's four-player, online, and local co-op.
So what has to be your personal favorite combination then on Streets of Rogue?
It's honestly the scientist and the gorilla. I love that. With the scientist, you can kind of... I said this game is a co-op, but kind of almost like 50-50, I see a lot of people go in and just start playing it as versus a little bit, because you can't hit each other, you can hit your friends. So as a scientist, you have the ability to make someone real big, make someone real small, and just kind of like mess people up, and typically use that against your enemies, right? If a boss enemy is coming up, he's really got a lot of HP, you make him real small. Well, most people will just shoot up their friends, make them real small, and accidentally, I'm air quoting here, step on them.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little bit of sabotage, which I think is really fun.
That's awesome. Now, you're talking about the customization, so I don't know if you can answer this or not, but like, what other characters can we expect from Streets of Rogue as it goes on?
Sure. We definitely want to release more characters. I heard the number kind of 40 being tossed around is maybe like our goal. Again, we launched with 20. Another example of a character is the banker. He's an investment banker. So you start with 500 coin, which lets you really just buy tons of stuff on the map. However, you have a drug problem. So if you are without drugs for a certain amount of time, you will start taking damage to
yourself.
Oh,
so it's like withdrawal.
You go through withdrawal. So you got to find the drug dealer on the map, and there's always a drug dealer on the map. Buy cocaine from him and either take it, and you can also use cocaine in different ways around the level as well.
Right, because I noticed on this one level I had like a syringe that could be used to pollute the air of sorts.
Right, exactly. So if you, for example, if you use cocaine and put it through the air filtration system, everybody within that zone gets a speed boost, literally.
Now can we see possible cameos or playable characters from the Tiny Build's past lineup show up in this game?
Maybe. I won't say anything yet, but you might see that.
Awesome. So let's move on to a game that's coming out next month for our PC and for the Nintendo Switch, Mr. Shifty. A lot of people have been comparing this to Hotline Miami with a bit of... Oh, God. I'm not blanking on the other game. Which one?
Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler, yes. So tell us about the concept of Mr. Shifty for all of our listeners here.
Right, well, you pretty much got it. When you first play it, it is a top-down action game. So you're like, oh, I recognize this is Hotline Miami. The Nightcrawler aspect comes in is because you have a short-range teleporting ability. And the game is really about, it's not stealth, it's really about action takedowns, right? So when you get into it, when you get your hands on the controller, there's really only two buttons. It's shift, which, again, that short-range teleport, and attack, which is punching at the very beginning. And it's a visceral feeling that you get from actually really fighting the enemies. You've got these destructible environments, so you can punch people through windows, through bookshelves. I've played in a number of different ways. And the way the game grows over time, there's over 100 levels in the game, you start coming across enemies with, instead of just a simple shotgun, they have flamethrowers, they have landmines, they have bruisers, they get really kind of crazy, and you also have an arsenal of weapons that you can find throughout the building that you're climbing, right? So if you break an office table, a rod will come out, you kind of go a little kung fu on them.
Right.
There's a trident in the beta that you may have played. There's a trident that you can throw and kind of hits through all enemies in a row.
Oh, damn. I wish I had found that one. So what's like the story in Mr. Shifty? Like, why is he traveling up this building?
So Mr. Shifty, of course, is the world's best thief because he's got this, kind of walls don't matter to him so much. And he's trying to steal a secret material from the world's most secure facility. So you're essentially going up a tower to steal from this one guy at the very top.
Nice. Now, is it just one tower or is there going to be multiple towers?
One tower.
All right. Well, maybe DLC will have a lot more towers. We'll see.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe the final one that we're going to talk about, the other one that I just went hands-on with, is Party Hard 2. Wow, I love the first game. It was really cool and retro and old school. This one is cranking it up a notch, going towards something more of this 16-bit realm. What else has changed within Party Hard 2?
Cool. So yeah, as you mentioned, it kind of has that 3D to 2D effect. So you're going to recognize the same sprites that are 2D, but they're walking around in a 3D environment. In this game, you have the option to complete objectives in addition to or instead of killing everybody at the party, which was the premise of number one.
Right.
So for example, in the build that you played, you were tasked with getting rid of about nine different characters at the party. The chemists and the drug dealers.
Right.
You can also, a few other things, you know, explode, set off a canister to explode and hide a body. Those are your objectives for the demo that we have. So it allows you to play the game in a different way. You can play kind of more Hitman style. Makes you kind of follow the AI, the specific AI you're targeting, and see what he does rather than just killing everybody.
Exactly.
A couple of other things that the engine has unlocked for us is kind of explosions now. So
yeah.
You can set cars on fire. You can create a lot more mayhem than you used to. We also have the AI bouncers that you kind of ran into. So now they're guarding certain rooms, for example, a ladies' bathroom. So if you, as a protagonist or any other male in the party, try to go in, he's going to punch you out.
Right.
You can sneak past him, of course, in true party hard fashion, but it adds a level of difficulty that wasn't there before.
Right. Like, well, what I had to do was I had to wait for him to actually punch another person that was trying to get in there, and while he's doing that, I snuck in.
Exactly.
So there's like this whole, as it was in the first party hard game, there is a lot of strategy that goes into getting your hits done properly.
Absolutely.
So, like, is it the same protagonist from the first game that you're playing as, or is this somebody brand new?
It's the same protagonist. Instead of killing everybody at your neighbor's party in Party Hard 2, this guy, he didn't get his Christmas bonus. So now, instead of your neighbor parties, you're going to corporate parties.
Ah, gotcha.
You know, it's a natural, I feel like it's a natural evolution of our character. He's grown up a little bit, he's a little bit wiser, he's got a real job now, and well, you know, old habits die hard.
Yeah, he's got a, still has a little bit of a loose wire, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that is all fantastic. Now, those are the three that I did get to go hands-on. What else is Tiny Bell been working on, too?
Gosh, so much. Let's see, what did we talk about? So this past week alone, we announced Graveyard Keeper, which is the Punch Club team's second game. That's essentially Stardew Cemetery, right? It's Stardew Valley for adults, so that's going to be a great sandbox game where you're managing a graveyard. We have Phantom Trigger, which is Divide by Sheep's second game I mentioned before, and it is it's a roguelike with a focus on deeper combat mechanics. So you've got combos that unlock and change over time as you level them up, kind of a little bit more like it's the art style of Hyper Light Drifter meets the action mechanics of maybe a Devil May Cry. So that one's a really interesting entry into our portfolio. And of course, we can't not mention Hello Neighbor.
Yeah.
That's kind of the breakout hit of this year. We're still aiming for a summer release on that one. We're really excited to see where that one goes. We have not announced whether there'll be an Alpha 4 out yet. But as of right now, there are three alphas out that are available to play. And we just love what all the YouTubers and streamers are doing with it. And all the little kids, actually. The little kids are much better at that game than any adult
really?
I've seen. Yeah, it's amazing. You admire it. And you're also a little frightened. Because it's like, wow, that kid is really good at breaking and entering.
Yeah.
Excellent. And I do want to mention one game that we announced 2 weeks ago while we were at GDC.
Okay.
It's Yandere Simulator. That
yes.
game. Yes. So you've heard of it.
Oh, I've played it a couple times. I love that game. I know it's really dark, and you know, as an anime fan, I love that sort of aspect of, you know, there's the tsundere and there's the yandere, and you're speaking to the choir when it comes to the anime stuff.
Fantastic. So I come from the world of anime as well. For me, like, I'm, you know, more and more these days, I play Western games. I go to these gaming conventions, and so for Tiny Build, a purely like Western company, to sign a game like Yandere Simulator and take it to its full potential, like, we could not be more excited. Actually, this weekend we had a girl come over to our booth in the Yandere like Simulator cosplay,
yeah.
and we took a picture of her wearing the hat. We posted it on our Tiny Build Twitter, our Tiny Build hat, and we were just so excited. She was like, "Oh, I was wondering if you guys would recognize me," and we're like, "You have no idea. We are so excited about that game." And, of course, we've signed a lot of other things we can't announce yet, but it's a busy year for us.
I know.
So real excited to show you kind of everything we have.
Right. I know you can't say anything, but out of curiosity, because I know you guys like to roam around conventions, go through all, like, the indie area. Has anything here grabbed your attention?
We've seen a lot that is very, very interesting. Let's just say that.
Okay. Carrie, thank you so much for joining me here on One-on-One. Tiny Bell Games has just become such a massive, like, indie developer, indie publisher. You guys should be really happy because you've been bringing us such unique titles for the last couple of years, and every time you guys release something, I personally get very excited.
Thank you so much for your time. For us, we feel like we owe it to all of you guys, you know, the press, the streamers, the YouTubers, big and small, have helped us out. We, you know, you see us on the floor. We've got a giant booth. We're very bright and orange. However, we came from that indie background. We were only able to do this because our first indie game was a success. So that's why we always support all streamers, YouTubers, podcasters to come to us. We always want to talk to you guys. We always want to send you kind of the good stuff and let us know what you think about it.
Absolutely. Kerry, thank you once again. And best of luck. I know PAX is just about to end, so whatever is next in the corner, where can people find you? What's the next convention you guys are going to be at?
Gosh, the team's literally next week. We're headed to South by Southwest. We don't have a presence there, but we are nominated for, we're either nominated for an award or giving away an award. I believe our next official convention, and it'll probably be E3. We don't do a booth there, but we'll either do a press room or, you know, demos somewhere. So the big next big major convention will probably be PAX West, which is in August, right? So it'll be a little bit of a while, but that means we have all this time to work on development. As with all of our games, we always send out alphas and betas. So all you have to do is sign up on our websites for the various games, you know, graveyardkeeper.com or go to tinybuild.com to sign up for our open betas, and we'll get these games out to you guys as soon as we can.
Fantastic. And listeners, thank you for listening to our episode of PAX East 2017, a one-on-one special. I want to thank all my guests, from Kerry to the folks over at Jammed Up Games. So many people we've had on our show. Just how crazy the games, especially in the indie aspect, have been. Just phenomenal. I don't think I've played a bad game this entire weekend, which says a lot for a convention. And once again, Kerry, thank you for joining us here. And I feel like Tiny Bill is the perfect way to end this special episode. And best of luck to all of you. Best of luck at South by Southwest, hopefully at E3 as well. And good luck with what's coming up on the horizon. I messed up on the ending.